amplifier votre passion pour la guitare pour quelques euros par mois. Rendez-vous sur lachaîneguitare.com. Amplify your passion for the guitar for a few dollars per month. Head over to theguitarchannel.biz. Welcome to the Guitar Channel. I am super happy to welcome you a new live interview. I have on the other side of the Skype connection the one and only Jennifer Batten. Jennifer, how are you doing today? This is still morning for you, right?
It is very morning for me, but I have had coffee. I'm doing pretty good now.
Okay, so you are based in Oregon. What is the situation at the moment for you there?
Well, we've been through a lot. I had to evacuate for 3 nights because fires were so close to my house.
Okay.
And I snuck 2 cats and 2 dogs into a hotel, which was slightly traumatizing, not knowing if I would have a house to come home to. But I do. I'm back.
Good.
Very happy about that.
Mm-hmm. So last time we saw each other, you were sitting right next to me. You were in Paris. It was, I think, in 2018, and you came for a couple of interviews, and you also did a great masterclass. So what is the latest news for Jennifer Batten?
The latest news is I am putting all of my energy into an online symposium that I launched in August. At that time, I had Neely Brosh, Monster Player, Gretchen Mann, Vicky Genfen. And this time, Neely's off doing other things. We're going to do it every 2 months. And this time, we have Angela Petrelli.
Nice.
So we have 4 instructors that have a huge, wide range of styles and things to offer. And in 18 hours, from a Friday to a Monday, we do 24 modules of the stuff that we are most passionate about. You know, I get into tremolo bar details and intervallic playing and stuff that really fires me up, as does everyone else. We get students from all over the world. We had an inquiry from Zimbabwe and Cuba last week, and had people from Holland and Mexico City and New Zealand last session. So it's a growing little monster of fun. And we've got, gosh, I think 14 sponsors on board this time. And on the Monday night, it's just a celebration party and Q&A and kind of a big community spirit thing where we're able to give away some really great stuff from the sponsors. This symposium and the one in December are sponsored by Positive Grid. So I just got my Spark amp, and I'm digging into that to see all that it can do. Fishman's one of the big sponsors. Sweetwater Sound, one of the greatest online retailers. Mm-hmm. And Stage Ninja and Audix Mics. People can go to GuitarCloudSymposium.com and see all of the sponsors and the giveaways and look into audio samples and videos of all of the instructors. So we're gearing up to have I could not have asked for a better launch. We got so many great responses and testimonials from the students. I put a bunch of those up on the page too. So we're doing the right thing. People are happy and excited and inspired.
Excellent. Was that a project you started because of the pandemic, or it was something you started before than that? Yeah, so it was okay.
Yeah. Like all other musicians, all of my tours are canceled for the foreseeable future. You know, they kept postponing dates. First it was November, then it was next March, then it's next summer. And I really don't think people are going to feel comfortable gathering in a concert hall for at least another year. I mean, even when there is a vaccine, vaccines are never 100%. Mm-hmm. So when you're risking your life to go to a party, you know, to see a band, it's anybody's guess how long it's going to take us to get back.
Mm-hmm. So if people want to subscribe, how much is it? Where do they go?
GuitarCloudSymposium.com. And I will say this is great timing because until midnight Friday, my time, Pacific Coast time, they can save $50.
Good.
Right now it's $3.99.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. What about when people subscribe, so there will be plenty of interactive video session. Does the people who subscribe have some access to, I don't know, document, PDF, backing tracks, stuff like that? Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, this Friday, all of our folders are due. So
Okay.
the people that have signed up, I'll send things out. And I do a thing. I started it as an experiment last time in August of doing virtual jams. And it's the kind of thing, until we get 5G and the speed is so fast that we can, there's no latency and we can jam live. Right now, I have a track, and for instance, I do a blues where I'll play four bars and then I'll comp for four bars. So the people, I can't hear them, but everybody can play at the same time and get some semi-interactive playing with me.
That's good.
So
So it's yeah. Was there other project you started during the pandemic because you basically had to adapt the way you work as a musician?
yeah, not only being forced to think of something else, but after 30 years of traveling, I'm kind of over it.
Okay.
Broken guitars, missing luggage, missed connections. It is so stressful. And you can hardly take any weight at all, especially in Europe, because fuel is so much more expensive. It's really challenging, and I wanted to travel less. I want to just go out for the big festivals, maybe a week, and then come back instead of being out for 6 weeks. So it's kind of working out well for me.
So you don't want the pandemic to stop, basically.
Well, I would like to play locally. I actually started a band in town in Portland, Oregon last summer, in part so I could work more at home. But now we can't play. So I do want to play, but not necessarily in Moscow.
I hear you. So 2 days ago, we lost the one and only Eddie Van Halen. So all the guitar world is kind of devastated at the moment. What do you think it's going to be the legacy of Eddie?
Oh gosh, it's very, very parallel to Michael Jackson, where it was a one of a kind creative tornado where, with Michael, it wasn't just the songs, it was the dancing, the visuals, just things that layered on top. And with Eddie, a lot of guitar players think of him as a cutting edge soloist, where he came up with all these different techniques, which he surely did. But on top of that, the song forms were so much more advanced than, especially in the 80s, than things of that era. He would add these really interesting intros to songs. In fact, I was trying to be a jazz player and I was playing in a jazz club when I was getting turned on to Van Halen. And I remember during a break, I went out to my car and I listened to Mean Street. And the intro to that song, I listened to it over and over, and I stopped playing jazz right then and there. That's it. The energy coming from those wicked harmonics and the intro tapping was like, ah, I want that instead. So, and a lot of the forms, he would add an extra section, a completely different section for the solo. And his writing, he would really take you on a story where you would get so into what he had done, which is the ultimate thing for a song. You want to take the listener on a journey with you. And he'd succeeded at that. And often with somebody that is so creative, the creativity is going to go beyond the music and into, for instance, decorating his guitar. A lot of people decorate their guitar, get it airbrushed or whatever, but it was such a unique standout design that when you see those red, black, and white stripes, it can only be one person. It's like part of the brand. And same with his overalls when he was wearing those. And the fact that he would smile. At that time, everybody was trying to be so tough and macho on stage and grimace and all that. And he was having a good time. And I think that's why, in part, the audience and such a wide audience resonated with them. I mean, Van Halen had a lot to offer. I mean, there was guitar, and then a lot of people were just there for Roth and the lyrics, of course. But to see a guy up on stage having a blast and enjoying the hell out of what he's doing, it's infectious. Mm-hmm. What's the love?
Yeah. Do you remember the very first time, I don't know, you heard Eruption?
Yes, it wasn't good.
Okay. What do you mean? Yeah. You didn't like it?
I was at GIT,
yeah,
which is now Musicians Institute, and I was into Pat Martino and George Benson and all that, and somebody had it on it had to be a cassette player back then. They put headphones on me and go, check this out. And it was too loud, and I was not in that headspace. And I was like, yeah, thanks a pant load. Well, it took another year, maybe 2 years, before I go, oh, shit, now I get it. And then I got deeper and deeper and deeper and realized what a genius and what an original voice he was. And at one point, in fact, I had it here. I wrote out every note of every solo to the 1984 record.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Which is no easy feat. Mm-hmm. You know, writing out jazz solos, which I had done before, it's basically eighth note, 16th note, some triplets. With Eddie, you get these clusters of 9 and 13 and just, it's very difficult to write out accurately. So I actually had one Marantz cassette deck. It was analog, so I took it down very slow. That took it down an octave. And then for certain very difficult passages rhythmically, I played that live down an octave to another Marantz cassette deck. And I would tap 1E and 2E and just so the time was really clear when it was down that low and muddy. Mm-hmm. To figure out how many notes were between 1 and E.
Mm-hmm. That's the Facebook, the songbook that was never published, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had talked to my publisher about doing it, and he was all about it. Yeah, mm-hmm. That'd be great. Van Halen's huge. And when I finished it, then he goes, well, do you know anybody in Van Halen's camp? Because I don't know how to get it published. I'm like, don't shoot me. So, yeah, it never saw the light of day. But it's, you know, it was there's never any loss when you're working on music and learning things. It's all collective to make you better and better over time.
Mm-hmm. So we all know that you got to play with Michael Jackson for many years. So you kind of filled Eddie Van Halen's shoes every night to play the Beat It solo and stuff like that. So how was it to be Eddie Van Halen on stage?
You know, it was interesting in many regards. Eddie Van Halen never had to put on a fiber optic laser headdress while he played. So, you know, I had this ridiculous shit on my head that had a really long cable that went to a computer that changed colors as I walked across the stage. And every once in a while, somebody would step on my cable and I'd get whiplash. And every tour, it was something different. One tour, they've designed this dragon to be on my shoulders, which was so heavy,
sure,
I wanted to
die. Why not?
Die.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just awful. And I will say, the very first time that I played Beat It when they turned the lights out to test out the headdress, it was so dark, I couldn't see my fretboard.
Okay.
And that's a solo where you kind of have to, because the tapping and, oh, God, I was just hunched over so far to try to get it right. I think I missed a few things. So ever since then, whenever I know I'm going to do theater shows, which can be pitch black between songs especially, I got glow-in-the-dark tape for fret markers. And as it turned out, after I did that, all of the shows that we did always had enough ambient light that I didn't really need it. But yeah, it's the solo is a challenge. It's always been a challenge. It still kicks my ass. There's certain things like some of those squeal harmonics. If they don't pop, I get really depressed for the rest of the solo.
Okay.
Damn it.
Did you get to meet Eddie? I think I you did, right? I read that in an interview. That's correct, yes?
Yeah, I did meet him a couple times. The first time was at a NAMM show. It was Floyd Rose had a suite that it wasn't part of the main NAMM show, and I don't know how I found out about it, but I ended up hanging out in there, and I thought, at that time, the Floyd Rose tremolo was so new, it was like Floyd was a star, you know? So I wanted to be in there, and I was hanging out, and Eddie walked in. And I felt kind of sorry for him because, especially at that time, he was such a god that everybody in the room looked at him like a zoo animal. Like, oh, you know, it's like he couldn't just hang and be bros with everybody. But he did a little playing. And I'm not sure if I actually said hi to him or met him at that time. But there was another time when during the Bad tour, we had a break between legs of the tour. And I was supposed to play a gig with a band I had played with before. And so I was driving through L.A. traffic, which is always hell. And I was late to get to the rehearsal for the band and showed up all sweaty. The manager of the band greeted my car and said, Eddie Van Halen's next door and he wants you to prove you can play the Beat It solo.
Okay, cool.
No pressure.
Yeah, sure.
And at that point, I just said no. You know, I was like, ugh, I've had this day where that's just another level of crush. And eventually his roadie came next door and said, well, would you just come over and say hi? And I said, of course I would. I'd love to. And as soon as I walked in the place where he was, it was just Eddie and his roadie and maybe one other person. I think he was testing out equipment. He puts his 5150 Strat on me, which anytime I put on a guy's guitar, it hangs so low, it's uncomfortable, right? And so I started playing the Beat It solo because I was playing that with Michael. It was a little bit of a challenge because he kept his tremolo bar loose. Without swing, and I always had mine set, so I knew exactly where it was, so it took a little bit to find it when I needed it. But I played it, and then he grabbed the guitar back, and I was trying to remember what he had done, because it's not something that he played with Van Halen. It was a one-off where he went in, and Quincy had him come in, and I think he laid down a couple tracks that they comped together. And it's just a brilliant solo. It's, you know, it's just a solo that is 100% perfect, and which is hard to do when it's off the cuff. You know, he's just so connected. And all of the solos at that time in the 80s, you can really hear when something's worked out. It's just kind of obvious. But just his character in playing, it was always so adventurous and extreme and deep felt. In fact, I'm motor mouthing, but it takes me to another thing of when you asked about me playing that with Michael, and it never felt right when I played with Michael. I had played it in a cover band for a couple of years, and I loved the way it made me feel, like starting with that deep dive, the very first note is just like, hello, we got an adventure to take you on. And then I realized a couple months into the Jackson thing that we were playing the song so much faster than the original. It just kind of sucked the life out of it, really. And if Eddie had been given that tempo to play to, it would have been a completely different solo. So I was happy to do it, you know.
Yeah, it's great. It's really great to be able to hear the story from you, because the way I remember that very old interview is that Eddie actually asked you, okay, can you remind me how I play that? And that's basically what you said, right? So
Yeah.
That's cool.
You know, I would have given anything to have a smartphone camera back then.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
Before smartphones, so I have no evidence. I only have the memory, and man. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. What about the other big adventure you have with Jeff Beck? I mean, you played, I think, about 10 years with Jeff Beck. Is that correct?
It was 10 years with Michael Jackson, 3 years with Jeff Beck, and two CDs. It's the Who Else CD and You Had It Coming tours.
So what's the takeout after such an incredible adventure with Jeff Beck?
Yeah, it was really, really rich. Just being able to, I mean, the playing, of course, but just being able to hang out with him on a bus and listen to music and listen to his opinions on stuff and to listen to what he liked to listen to, which was all over the map. You know, I tell people he would listen to the Spice Girls and Ornette Coleman in the same hour. And he's a super sensitive guy, which I think the best artists are, because when you have a certain sensitivity level, you can pick up more from what you hear. Because listening is on so many levels. You know, some people will listen to the lyrics and they're not really conscious of the groove or changes, and people listen at all different levels. But when you're super sensitive, you kind of have this umbrella where, you know, the EQ on the snare on that thing. And that's how he would listen. He would pick up things and talk about them that I didn't even think about. So especially when we were in the studio recording, sometimes I'd think, like, you don't need another guitar player on a Jeff Beck record, so why am I even here? You know? But invariably, there'd be something he would say during the day, sometimes 5 or 6 hours in, and I go, that was the magic piece of wisdom that I will remember for the rest of my life. Yeah, there was some magical moments that just made my life much richer, especially his... just how creative he is.
Can you give us an example of, I don't know, piece of wisdom you got out of Jeff Beck?
The one that I always remember is he said, if the groove is good, the drums, then you don't need much else. I mean, that's such a Zen thing to say. You think of the average guitar record, especially in the 80s, it was just all about, here's track one, here's me shredding, here's track two, here's me shredding again. You know, it's like you put everything you have into every song. And Jeff is the exact opposite, where he would play exactly what's needed. At the end of the record, you want more.
Yeah.
Instead of, I've heard that, I'm not going to get the next record. And he never wanted to repeat himself. So he was, and still is, always searching for the next thing. He always wants, he's got a voracious appetite for a new tune. He always felt, before we went out on tour, we need a new tune. There's got to be some new tune that he's so excited about that it just makes the whole show happen. You know, it's like the Holy Grail. It's always the next thing, that the next thing. And he's one of those cats. I mean, gosh, you think of all the guitar players from the 60s that pretty much, I mean, of course, they grew over the years, but not like Jeff, where every record there's something new, something new. You know, he's been working at his craft and growing in some way.
And do you think there was some kind of influence in your guitar playing, or you were already at a stage where you already had your voice on the instrument?
Boy, that's hard to say. I mean, there's no moment when you say, okay, I have my own voice. It's something I strove for on purpose. You know, I remember when I was back in guitar school, Pat Metheny was just getting out there, and Van Halen and 79 was just starting to really rise. And I remember one day I was thinking, all personal guitar sounds have been taken. You know,
okay. There's no room left. Okay.
You know him when you first hear him. In fact, I did this thing where I took all solos from some of my favorite players. I had Van Halen, all solos, no song, just the solos, back to back. I did that with Jaco, with Pat Metheny, I think with Robin Ford and some others. And then just as you think all sounds have been taken, then somebody new comes along with an original voice. So all you can do is, I think, set your consciousness to try to be original and steer clear of things that have been done, and then take the influences in a way that doesn't steal from them. I mean, it's, I think it's much easier to clone another player than to take what you love about them and make it your own.
What is exciting to you after so many years as a professional musician? What keeps you awake at night to play the music?
Listening to new players that are out there that are breaking boundaries. I think that one of the best out there right now is Matias Asato. I don't think he even has a record out yet, but he's an Instagram guy. I mean, he started out that way anyway. He's playing with various artists now, but he has such a breakout feel. I mean, there's another guy that has an original voice, an original feel, and it's such a welcome sound coming out of the whole shred thing where everybody's goal was to play faster than everybody else. You know, he's the opposite. He's like getting to a much deeper level of humanity, I'll say. So that kind of stuff I find inspiring. I like to listen to stuff that's completely different from what I do. I was talking to some people about the Irish pipes the other day.
Okay.
Not the Scottish pipes. The Irish is a whole different bag. And as far as bending into a note, I think it sounds superior than what any guitar can do. You know, it's there's a guy named Davy Spillane that Jeff Beck turned me on to. In fact, I think Jeff is on one of his songs. And it's just such a beautiful sound. One thing I'm really getting into these days is vocals. I heard Aretha's version of Rolling in the Deep. And when I heard it, there was part of it that just, you're listening and you get so deep into a song, into a melody, into the way that the singer's interpreting it, that your whole body just goes, ah, you know? And that's what she does in that song. I had heard Rolling in the Deep with the original singer, Adele. And then I didn't even know that Aretha did it. And somehow I heard that and I go, oh my God, I want to do that on guitar. And of course, it's impossible to capture it 100% because Aretha is Aretha, right? There's little nuances in the voice that are very difficult to get with guitar. But just the fact that I spent a lot of time trying to get there, I think that's the ultimate in what you can do with a guitar, is to try to make it vocal. And it's the nuance in everybody's playing that really makes it personal.
I remember, so when you were in Paris in 2018 for a masterclass, it was in fact half a masterclass, half a performance, and you were playing with some image, some movie you created, and the importance of the melody you played was super important, and the way you sculpted every note to match basically what you also created on the screen. So is that still something you want to do in the future, to have your solo gig?
Yeah, that's something I came up with about 10 years ago, just as a way, in part, to be able to work without having to rely on a band. You know, I have this show that's ready to go. I have over 3 hours of videos that I've made that I can play to. And I had an Italian booking agent for a while there who was booking a band, but you can't necessarily book 7 days a week and get the money you need for a band. So there were several times where the band was sat in a hotel for a day and I'd fly off to Spain and have my show. I fly with two projectors, two laptops, and my Thomas Blug Amp 1 in my carry-on. And that's the show. I can do it anywhere. In fact, I started canvassing the wineries in the Northwest. There's over 800 wineries up here, in part to travel less and play locally. And I got a big screen TV, which is the biggest TV I could get that would fit in my car.
Okay.
So I could be able to do daytime shows, because you can't project during the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, that'll be an ongoing thing.
Mm-hmm. And you don't miss the actual interaction, playing live with other musicians? Or it's just something two completely different way to perform?
Yeah, it's different things. I enjoy aspects of each of them, but I'll tell you, one of the things that I do enjoy about doing the solo show is I have full control of the volume.
Okay.
I mean, 3 years with Jeff Beck, and my ears, there's frequencies I'll never hear again, just because I really can't take the battering of a band anymore. I have to have in-ear monitors or some kind of protection. It makes me wonder how I did it when I was younger, but you know, your ears need 48 hours to repair from a loud show, and if you're playing every night, it's just damage that can't be repaired.
What are the next projects you have in store for 2021? Anything special or nothing really specific because of the strange times we're going through?
Well. I can't even announce it yet, but the Guitar Cloud Symposium is going to break off into different tentacles as time goes on. We have a lot of ideas of different places to take it, because right now the format is each teacher gets 20 minutes per subject. It's very condensed, like a TED.com talk. So in an hour, you get three subjects, then a half hour of Q&A time, and then the next teacher takes over.
Mm-hmm.
So we will be changing the format, not for the main symposium, but for a second offering.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. What about some music project? I think it was in 2017 you released a project with Scherer. So it was the Scherer Baton, the Battle Zone album. Will there be a follow-up to that?
I don't think so.
No? Okay.
You know, it's because of how the music business is now, where everybody can steal your music. You know, you can get 2 million plays on Spotify and make $5. It's like, where are you going to, unless you got a sugar daddy that's going to pay for the project.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was talking to Scott Henderson about it, and he was trying to encourage me to keep putting records out, but I don't know. And honestly, unless there's money that pops out of the sky somehow, it's one thing I can record everything at home, but it's the mixing and mastering on my last album cost me $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just put that up in the air. I do a lot of sessions. In fact, somebody gave me 20 songs to play on, which is really daunting to have at the same time, and I still have 15 left to go.
Okay. So you have plenty of work. That's cool.
Yeah. Mm. I have an avalanche of to-dos.
Yeah. I heard the interview you did with Scott Henderson and Bruce Foreman and Troy McLean. It was on Guitar Wank. Right? Yeah, super funny and super interesting interview. Yes,
that was really fun. One of the things that we do on the Guitar Cloud Symposium, you know, it starts on a Friday, ends on a Monday, and the Monday is a party. I have a special guest, and I had Scott for the last one. It was really, really fun. Not just because I had an entire bottle of champagne over here. But
it helps. I'm sure it helps. Yeah.
Yeah. I got Andy Timmons joining us on the next one. The next symposium is October 16 to 19.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Excellent. So if people want to register, they go to guitarcloudsymposium.com. That's right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. As a conclusion, what would be the word of wisdom you would like to share with people watching this? To how can we keep the kind of level of energy you seem to be projecting? How do you do it?
Well, I think there's a ball of energy within music that's recorded. And of course, it's way different from live, but that's what keeps you fired up. It's probably something very ethereal about the frequencies that you're intaking. It, depending on the volume, it really goes through your whole body, through your bones. and also playing music. That's they've done studies where listening to music, there's a certain part of your brain that lights up, but when you play it, when you're fully engaged, your whole brain lights up. And I think musicians are super lucky at this time during the pandemic that we have music to go to, because it's healing. It's absolutely healing, man. I can have the shittiest day and I will come in the studio and play for a couple hours and I walk out a different person. So that's one thing that keeps me coming back. It's the antidote to insanity.
Okay. Let's play the music then. Excellent. Jennifer, it was really great to be able to have you on the show. So again, thank you very much for your time. Hopefully you will come back to Paris, or I will go back to, I don't know, to the US when we can travel again. And we can do another interview, a guitar and like we did in 2018. It was great. And thank you again very much for your time, Jennifer.
Sure. Thanks for having me. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Au revoir.
Au revoir. Pour le prix d'un magazine, abonnez-vous à la chaîne Guitare pour accéder aux vidéos intégrales. For the price of a magazine, subscribe to The Guitar Channel to access the full videos.